I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast like Sylvan, the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is hopefully not a jealous guest who wants to take over the podcast. It's Diana DeCostanzo, everyone. Woo!
Hello.
Don't steal my stuff.
Wait, was there a jealous guest that wants to take over your podcast?
No, I was kind of tying in the movie in a way.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Okay, now I get it.
Yeah. Because we're here today to talk about the 2020, more so for the year, not the movie.
Not a good year.
Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Story. The screenplay is by Sabuj Hossan and David E. Talbert, directed by David E. Talbert. And according to IMDb, an imaginary world comes to life in a holiday tale of an eccentric toy maker, his adventurous daughter, and a magical invention that has the power to change their lives forever. So that's not right by any means, I feel like. How do you feel about that summary?
It doesn't have the sparkle that the movie has.
Right. And also, you know, trauma.
Oh yeah, that's there's a lot of layers to it, actually. And yeah, so that I feel like is very surface level description.
Yeah, because okay, first of all, I know where this is coming out, holiday season, you know, around Christmas and all that. Christmas is not a big deal for this story, I feel like.
That is kind of what I like about it, or one of the things I like about it, is that technically it's a Christmas movie, but if you remove the Christmas element, it wouldn't be very different at all. Like, it could technically take place right outside Christmas time, but I think it adds this level of, you know, family gatherings around the holiday.
I understand.
What I like to, which, spoiler alert, we're recording this in November to be released in December, because what I'll say is I actually have a strict rule about no Christmas before December. Like, I'm not someone that likes to celebrate any Christmas stuff or watch Christmas movies early, and I made an exception for this. So I kind of liked that I was able to break my rule and not feel like I was breaking my rule too much. And the reason I have that rule is because my birthday is at the very end of November, and I feel like people are trying to pass over my birthday. It's very selfish.
That's the reason. But also, like, in terms of holiday, this is, like, I see your point about family and how Jeronicus and Jessica and Journey need to be a family together. But I think if you set this any time of the year, it'll still be the same. You know, if you set it at Thanksgiving, you know, if you want a holiday, set it at Thanksgiving, Valentine's Day, Easter, 4th of July.
I guess Christmas is the most magical of the holidays. And there is that little, like, twinkle of Christmas magic about it. Like, there is a magical element to the story in general. So I guess that lends itself well to Christmas time.
Okay. Who has magic in this movie? Like, and why is nobody questioning the magic? Like, you got...
Because it's its own reality. And that's what I like, that it's established, like, immediately, is its own reality, the story. So we have this specific design and way of being and way of dressing, and the, like, steampunkness meets Christmas Carol. And... So we just, like, don't question that he can, like, see things and write math and equations in the air, and then Journey has this. But also in the very beginning, we see the young girl seeing the figures dancing in the fire. So that's kind of like how it starts.
Yeah, and then but then they get magic. They get the secret ingredient, or the final ingredient, whatever they call it, where it turns, what's this character's name? I forget already.
Don Juan.
Don Juan.
AKA Ricky Martin. AKA the true villain of the story.
Honestly, at points, it felt like they wanted Antonio Banderas. Because he was doing like a Antonio Banderas voice and accent, it felt like.
Well, okay, to be on Ricky Martin's side for a second, I don't know if you watched Palm Royale, the TV show that came out recently on Apple TV. Ricky Martin is in it, and he is amazing. Like, so good in it.
I'm not questioning his talent, his acting ability.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that I feel like maybe the part was originally written for Antonio Banderas, who then said no, and then Ricky Martin was like, bitches, I'm here.
Yeah, that totally could have happened. Yeah, it's just very like stereotypical like Spanish matador voice and personality and very like pompous. And I realized actually this time around watching it, because I was always like, oh, Gustafson is the villain of this story. But I realized how it's actually Don Juan, because he manipulates Gustafson, and Gustafson is just very like needy and insecure and impatient and vulnerable. And the Don Juan doll preys on that and is constantly telling him what to do.
It's
so
kind
anyway,
of,
the true villain of the story is the creepy animated doll.
It's kind of like the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, where like, you know, Don Juan is the man, is the person behind the curtain, and Gustafson is unfortunately the puppet, which is funny in a way, because, you know, a doll is puppeteering a human.
Yeah.
Which
and
is
Gustafson's
so dumb to say.
The way he dresses in his factory, that is so Emerald City. Like,
yes. Yeah.
The
and then.
Greens and- Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, we could talk forever about the costumes of this movie. Like, Geronicus loves plaid, always in plaid. I loved every single piece in this movie. Felicia Rashad, if she did not steal that robe after they wrapped filming this, I'm going to be so upset at her. I just want to shout out Michael Wilkinson, who is the costume designer for this. Because, like, even ensemble, snaps for Michael, ensemble, background players, whatever we want to call them in this piece, in this movie, because it honestly feels like a show at some points.
It's a full stage musical just on screen.
He, by the way, he also was the costume designer for Justice League and the Aladdin remake and American Hustle. He was the costume designer for Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League. So kudos to this guy. and then this one where you're like, oh, you let all of the fantasy out. You're like, oh, I need to not be designing superheroes. Let me design this funky, steampunky world.
Victorian. I would say like the costume, the overall style, and I guess you would call it like art direction of the movie is so strong. I think it creates like an identity right off the bat. And I absolutely love it, down to like even the way a lot of the women dress is like beautiful and kind of Victorian, but the colors and the designs on them sort of pop. I love that Journey and a lot of the girls' dresses or skirts aren't full length, and they're that perfect length that still makes them very active. And Mrs. Johnston or Miss Johnston, her dresses were gorgeous. I love those too.
I just liked all the detail on Journey's costumes, because like obviously she's our lead, so I'm sorry, I'm gonna be a costume nerd for a hot second. So she's our lead, so we need her to stand out a little bit more than the other kids. And like Edison also stood out because he had a different, he had the bifocal, the different glasses as well.
Yeah.
The inventory one where you're like, you know, have a magnifying glass attached to your glasses. But with Journey, like everyone had like different textures of fabrics and everything, but like I think they went a step further with her just to make her stand out a little
Right.
bit more, you know, especially on the like the snowball fight and her entrance to Geronicus's place. What's with all the J's, by the way? Like
Well, that's part of it. It's Journey, Jessica, Geronicus,
Jangle.
Jangle. The wife was Joanne that died.
Mrs. Johnson, more Ms. Johnson.
Yeah.
I,
But
yeah.
then Gus is a G. Like a hard
But
g
close
versus the
enough to the
j.
J sound.
Yeah, it could have been Justice.
Gustafson.
Speaking of Journey, maybe I'm getting off topic here, but I do need to shout out that actress is a star. She is wonderful. The whole world of and realm of possibility and imagination lives in her face, and she exudes it through the movie. I think she is fantastic. She's such a find, and she was absolutely perfect as Journey in this movie.
So her name is Madeline Mills. I think I remember reading that she, yeah. So this is like her first big thing that she's done. But I feel like I also saw that she was on Broadway at some point or in
Was she?
theater. I think so. I
That
mean,
wouldn't surprise me.
she should be at this point, 'cause like she did such a fantastic job, and she,
Yeah.
like, I don't know if you and I have talked about my feelings about kid child actors, kids in movies, and everything that are leads. I personally don't really like them. Like, I didn't really like
Yeah.
Edison, but I liked her. You know, like I feel like
Edison's cute.
Edison was cute. At least Edison was a secondary character that I can kind
Right.
of forget about him because he's not in a lot of the movie. But like when he was on, he was like, I'm a child star, you know? And she wasn't like that.
Ah, I
She
can see
was a
that.
little more professional, it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't have the right child in these roles, it doesn't work. And for this movie to work, they needed the exact right girl as Journey, and they found her.
Yeah. So this is not my first time watching it. I do remember watching this in 2020.
Yeah.
is this your this isn't your first time either?
Yeah, I think I watched it 2020, that year it came out around Christmas. And then I think each years since then, I've watched it around Christmas. So it's maybe my like fourth time watching it. And there's enough time in between, like in a yearly viewing, where you don't remember quite everything. And then you watch and you're like, I love this movie. It makes me feel
I,
so good and happy.
yeah, because I rewatching this, I remember that it was kind of like The Greatest Showman in a way, where like the music doesn't follow the time period. And like,
Definitely.
I know I didn't mention the writers of it because every song is like there is a group of people. Or there's at least two people, Philip Lawrence and Davey Nathan, who wrote a majority of the songs. But like John Legend wrote this, co-wrote This Day with them. Michael Diskinet, I don't know, I'm gonna go with it, wrote a bunch of songs with them on this. It felt like, you know. Obviously, these are modern songs, and it kind of, I guess, went with the steampunk nature of it.
Totally. There's a lot of the music that's very rhythmic, or at least starts and intros very like rhythmic. And not just the Make It Work song, which is a great example of that, but even like the original song. So we have this almost like rhythmic, like hip hop, modern feel, not quite like full hip hop, but there's a great like mix of styles that happens. And when you hear that John Legend is attached to it, which maybe he was a producer too on the movie. I might be mistaken with that. Okay. So I feel like that makes sense and clicks as far as like the musical sensibilities of like John Legend's style mixed with all these other folks. It works. Like, I think it also has to do with, like, you'll notice basically every single lead character except for the banker is a person of color, primarily Black or biracial. So that is reflected in this music too. Like, this, I do love that it's not like a white centered Christmas holiday story, because there's plenty of that that exists. And that I feel like it's at its core, it's part of the identity of the movie, like, and it's reflected in the music too.
And like the ensemble, background extras, everyone is like every shade under the rainbow, under the sun.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've got everyone there. So like, I know we are two white people talking about this, but
right.
I feel like it felt like it wasn't just a specific person of color story, but it felt like it's
a universal story that just happens to be like, this is it. And I think, again, like, I'm, as a white girl, not the best person to be like maybe speaking on this to fully understand its complexities, but what I will say is,
same.
This is a story that a child of any race and gender could watch and love. And when a story has representation but isn't about the representation, it just like normalizes telling like Black stories and stories.
In my internal backstory, I feel like they cast Felicia Rashad first, and then they're like, great, let's build from there. Because she's, you know, I want to joke and say that one of my flats is that she's not in it enough, but like, honestly, she's not in it enough for me. Like, she has opulence.
It's a small role.
Oh, that's why what I wanted to ask you. So, do you remember when you first watched this movie, did you know that she was Journey?
No, not in the beginning. Like, the twist at the end was a twist to me. I didn't like see it coming. But obviously I know it then the other times I've watched it, so it adds like a new layer. And there is some like plotty stuff at the end that I'm a little confused by, with that twist of like, how did the grandchildren not know her?
How
first
did
name?
They not know? Like,
did they not see that huge factory out? Do they not know that's the family factory? Who are their parents? What's been their relationship with their grandma? Why is this a surprise? Because they're not like 3 years old. So that's like the questions I had, if you're really thinking about it. But
because the opening
just
of
go
this,
with it.
Of this movie is Felicia Rashad with her grandkids, and she's telling them a new story, or a new story to them, which turns out to be her autobiography in a way.
Yep.
And it's like, these kids are teenagers. I'm not gonna lie, maybe 10, like one
They're
of them
not
is
teenagers.
10.
They're like 10, 9.
I was gonna say, like, they're at least between, they gotta be like 13, 14 max. That's what I meant by teenagers.
Gotcha.
I understand your confusion. I think they're young teenagers, at most, and it's like, how are they this old and they don't know your story? Like, is that some weird, wild family secret to not talk about it? And it's just, oh my God. And then they fly at the end as if they're fucking Peter Pan or something. And you're like, what the fuck?
Flying to Neverland. I did write down, because I kept having, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, it's like this movie or this movie, if they both had a baby, like this movie had a baby. So I wrote down my list of if all of these movies had a baby, it would be Jingle Jangle. So it's Christmas Carol, Peter Pan, Greatest Showman, Willy Wonka, and a little sprinkling of Matilda, like the musical Matilda.
Okay. Yeah. Also,
yeah,
to kind of delve into a sidetrack of music and everything, choreography. So
that's the very Greatest Showman, the choreography.
Because she did it. She did the choreography.
Oh, you know, that makes sense.
And also, the Cinderella that you did with Camila Cabello, where...
reminds me of that too, yeah.
The choreographer's name is Ashley Wallen. I like that she has her a signature style, but much like the music, like, it was fire, as the kids call it. You know, like, they... Like, that opening number with This Day, when the ensemble comes in and they're just, like, stomping and kicking and whoop-de-dooing, and you're like, this is amazing. And this is the opening.
It's Where do we go from here? Epic opening number. I will say that's the first thing I saw. The reason I watched the movie was because I was scrolling online one day, like, I guess right before it came out or right when it came out, and Netflix sometimes posts clips of things online so that you get like a little teaser or something, and I watched it. It was that opening scene and song, like in the toy shop, and I was like, this looks right up my alley and amazing. I have to watch this immediately, otherwise it may not have been on my radar. But it was literally watching and listening to that opening song that made me fall in love with it.
You know, John Legend, like I said, is one of the writers on that one. I wish he wrote more, but I know he's a busy, busy man.
Yeah. And I could see some songs were a little more like musical theater plot focused, like with older Geronicus's songs and wallowing in himself. Like, that feels like it could be a different writer and it would make sense to be more like musical theater, softer.
Well, so Forrest Whitaker plays Geronicus, older Geronicus, and Keegan-Michael Key plays Gustafsson. And
Gustafsson,
excuse me. And I think this was before the prom, or like right before the prom, where, you know, it was a surprise that he's doing musicals, Keegan-Michael Key. And it's definitely a surprise that Forrest Whitaker is in this, because I don't know him as a musical person. I know him more as like a very serious actor.
Very serious actor. Yeah, that is what he's known for. So I think this was a departure for him. And you can hear in his voice, he's more an actor that can sing than like a singer. But he pulls off the songs.
Oh my God, he does amazing. Everyone in this movie is delivering. It's like they knew that they were going to be shut down. So they're like, we got to put everything out.
And also shout out to Anika Noni Rose as Journey's mom. Jessica.
Sideline her this whole movie.
She's not in enough of it either. She only gets like one song and she puts in her time for that one. It's like she milks it.
So to go back to Keegan-Michael Key for a hot second, sorry to interrupt you. So this movie came out in November and the prom came out in December of 2020. So this did come out first and people were like, oh, he can sing. And then we see him in the prom and we're like, oh, he can really sing.
And then he also did Schmigadoon. I don't know when that was in relation to these, but you know, that was him in musical theater worlds.
True, but he doesn't really sing in that one, and that's the whole point of his character. But in this one, he's got Magic Man G, which, I mean, come on.
That's a snazzy number.
That's an amazing number. And then, I mean, I feel like that's really it for him, but it's still just like a very... It's his song, you know? He's the one who's singing. Like... Journey, Madeline Mills, who, by the way, I found out, I did look it up, she was in School of Rock on Broadway and then did this.
That makes sense.
So Madeline Mills like has the most songs because she is our lead and everything. But like when Forest Whitaker, when Keegan-Michael Key, and when Marisha Wallace, who is the singing voice for Miss Johnson, by the way.
It's a different singer than
it's
actress?
A different singer, yeah. But like when they have their moments, it is amazing. And they are breathtaking.
Her character, I would want to play her character, Mrs. Johnston. Like her music is so... Like,
she was
sultry,
just a little
funny.
Too horny for me. And I'm like, listen to him.
For a movie a kid can watch.
Right. She's a little too over the top horny and not listening enough to him being like, hi, I'm still grieving. Like, there is no timeline on grief, unfortunately. But fortunately, because then you can honor your lost loved one. But she's her calling him Jerry.
I mean, she got her backup. Her backup dancers. I love her backup. And like the music they
and the
sing.
The trio.
You'll feel better when you smile. They're great.
Doesn't he at one point say something like, oh, you really are singers? Like,
yeah.
So the whole premise of this is that Gustafson, right? Did I say his name right this time? Yes.
Yeah.
Gustafson is an apprentice of Geronicus and still and steals Geronicus's like idea book to create his own toy factory. I guess that's also why it's around Christmas, because it's toys and objects like that.
Yeah, that's true.
With the help of Don Juan Diego, a very CGI robot toy. What? He's a matador, but a robot,
or like a mechanical kind of toy, a magical mechanical toy. Which this toy was supposed to be the thing that changed the trajectory of Geronicus's career and was like the biggest thing ever. And so the fact that it was stolen basically ruins Geronicus's
but
life.
Also, because they put this magical final ingredient into Don Juan, Don Juan, which they never say what it is, which is very fascinating, but they put this in him and he has like a full conscious, and he states multiple times that he wants to be the only one of his kind.
He doesn't want to be mass produced because he's original and unique and has an ego.
And never says that they steal. He always works around it by saying that they're borrowing indefinitely. And I'm like, dude, you're stealing. Like, everyone calls him out on it too. And he's like, no, we're borrowing. No, you're stealing, my guy, my toy.
Yeah. And so while his life and career just skyrockets, Toy Maker of the Year, 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 Toy Maker of the Year. Love that part. Then Geronicus, his life is just in shambles, and his wife ends up dying, and he's not the same, and him and
he
his
sends
daughter.
Sends away his daughter once his wife is dead. Like, I understand, and at the same time, I'm just like, you can't be alone.
She's such a tragic character, the daughter, because she gets the brunt of like having to deal with her parents and sort of this family trauma that then goes down the generations and kind of gets healed. But it's like after her mom dies, her dad, and this happens, I mean, I don't know from personal experience, but I know that it happens, where the child is parentified, like they feel that they need to be the parent and be the one that holds it together because the other parent isn't doing well. And so, you know, that drives a wedge between them too. And she wants nothing more than to live this dream of being an inventor like her father. But life and tragedy happens, and she's not really able to
follow
that
also,
dream of hers.
The mom dies when she's in her teenage years as well, I would say. Like, that's the moment where you need to stay as a family. I'm fortunate that I don't have that kind of experience, but from what I've seen in other films and other TV shows, and what I've been told is, like, you need, like, work off each other. I get it that he's depressed and grieving, but I hated Geronicus a lot in this movie. And I get it. He's a complicated character.
Yeah.
Very complicated. But, like, when Journey first meets him and he's a dick to her, I'm like, this is my guy. My guy.
Yeah.
This is your daughter's child. You are a grandfather. Like, don't say that she is allegedly your granddaughter. She is your granddaughter. Just shut up and, like,
and he doesn't even know his granddaughter's name. He says, no, I think it's something, July, June, like, rattles off other names. But
other
when
J-names.
We meet him, like, when we meet him in sort of, like, present day time when he's, like, older, he is the Scrooge of the story. Like, that's, I think, where we see a lot of the Christmas Carol vibes of he's bah humbug to the world and everything. There's no magic in the world, and he sort of emanates that to other people.
But instead of being greedy and, you know, hoarding his money, he is grieving and
he's like
broken.
Self-wallowing. It's internalized. Yeah.
So it's yes, he is Scrooge, but in a very different way. Where he is like closing himself off from society. And yes, it's
he's
a complicated
hermit, yeah.
It's a complicated character. Still hated him.
Yeah, I would say, like, I don't, there was something about, like, older Geronicus that I didn't quite connect to as much as, like, the rest of the characters. And part of it could be because, you know, we see him at his most depressed and, you know, curmudgeonly. But also, I think there is something to Forrest Whitaker playing him as he would a lot of other dramatic roles, and we're in sort of this reality of, like, musicals, and everyone's a little sort of turned on to the camera
and, like,
the
a
audience.
Lot of color and pattern, and, you know, he
and it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I think that can help show this juxtaposition, but I do think there was a little bit of different styles of portraying the characters with how he was playing Geronicus and everyone else was inhabiting the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, rewatching it, we didn't even get to Buddy, but we'll get to him. Like,
we'll get to Buddy.
Like, there was a moment when after Journey and Edison, like, leave that vent, whatever that thing was, and they should have been dead, but they're not. I hovered and I was like, this has to be the end of the movie, right? And I was like, there's 30 minutes left.
30 minutes left. Yep.
Oh my goodness. So
that happened to me as I was rewatching it this time too.
You're like, this has to be the end.
They have,
like,
to heal family trauma.
Right.
And they have to have the comeuppance against Gustafson. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, well, I thought that, but that felt very finale, you know?
Totally.
Like they were going, like, it didn't feel like there was going to be 30 minutes left. It felt like maybe 10, you know, including credits. So,
and the final scene where we discover Felicia Rashad is Journey. And then, you know.
But I also was a little angry at Geronicus when it's revealed that he wrote the letters and kept them. And I'm like, dude.
It was such a moment out of The Notebook. It's like, I wrote you every day. I never got your letters. Here you go.
Here you go. Now love me. And it's like, okay, well, you wrote these however many years ago at this point. Like,
yeah. No, it's, I mean, it's hard to kind of like, you have one scene, fix their family trauma and the relationship between Jessica and Jeronicus in this one scene, writers go. That's a hard task. I feel like, you know, it was done fairly well. Like, it could have been fleshed out more, but I also think I loved Anika Noni Rose's acting in that scene a lot because she's so closed off and you can feel her wanting to give in and be like, daddy, you know,
again,
she loves him.
Underutilized, and she gets one fucking song.
Yeah.
Like, you have the songbird in this cast, and you give her one song. Come on, like,
it's a great song, though.
It is a great song,
I love it. The metaphor of like, we'll make it work again. He's trying to make Buddy work again, and she's trying to make their relationship work again. Oh, so good.
Buddy. So Buddy is a robot.
Yeah,
that can
a little robot
make,
friend.
Make people float. If people believe, which is a weird, that's such a
it's
weird
Tinkerbell.
Rule.
If you believe,
you can see, or I can be alive. And it's just but I would love a Buddy plushie, I will say. The design of him kind of is like Wall-E, but with legs.
I wrote down, Buddy is a mix of Wall-E and Johnny Five. Like, because his eyes, the way his eyes are like,
are very Wall-E
shaped. That's very Johnny, Wall-E too, but like Johnny Five. Do you remember that movie, Short Circuit, from like the 90s?
No, I've never seen that one.
You don't remember Johnny Five? Oh my God.
Sorry.
Johnny Five's great. He was a robot. Very 1990s robot. If you watch it, you'll see what I'm saying about like the eyes and stuff. But
well, here's the thing though.
It's a cute little thing.
With Buddy, the fact that he makes people fly and float and everything, I still don't understand that magic. But in the opening on the song This Day, when we go through the Jangle toy shop, there are things floating and flying and whizzing and beeping, and there are toys doing everything. And people are acting so surprised when Buddy happens, and you're like, why? We've had
but
other
he's
toys.
Sentient. I think that's the difference. He's sentient.
Well,
and
but like,
talks and
but like when Gustafson was spying and found and saw that they were flying, it's like, well, you have other toys. You yourself have an invention where you're trying to make it fly and not crash and everything.
I think the flying is like lower on the list of the amazingness of Buddy than you're thinking it is. Like, I know that sounds weird, but like,
well, in
the
a world where there's
it's
magic, like, come on.
It's the magic of imagination. And that's why I think we can't question the reality too much in this magical world. It's the circumference of spectacular and the square root of possible. It's sort of meant to be this fantastical, silly, but mechanical world.
Don't think
too deep about it. It ruins the magic.
Have you not listened to this podcast? I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
yeah.
pretty good at math. I never learned the square root of possible.
And
I took AP classes. So
I was listening to them say those words and I was like, I have no idea what you're saying. It's all gibberish. And then you're coming up with these symbols for the math. And I'm like, I don't understand. Granted, I'm not an inventor, but
well,
also
sine and theta, like, they're not, it's not all made up. Like, some of it is mathematical,
some of it, yeah,
but
like what they're saying and what they're writing, I'm like, I don't get this.
And that's the thing, I think that's part of it. It's not meant to be understood. It's like a mixture of imagination and engineering.
Well, you should throw Hook on that list, by the way.
Hook. I also forgot I wrote down Oliver too, because when the kids came out for the snowball fight, I was like, street urchins.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. There's so much to cover, but there's not enough time to do it all because this movie is like 2 hours long. But like, honestly, if you haven't seen this one yet, I say watch it. It's a feel good movie. It's got some great lessons. There's some tear jerky moments. We are 4 years away from sorry, 3 years away from the pandemic, so we can watch it now and not worry about other things. like at the time of this release,
it's a good escapism, feel good movie, and it's good for anyone of any age to watch and enjoy.
Do you think this would work on stage? I mean, obviously, 100%. They'd have to change a lot of things. Like, I don't think we'll be able to have.
I don't know. I've seen Cursed Child on Broadway too, and there's a lot of magic in that. And
well, that, but I mean,
I feel like a lot of it could be done, except the tunnel scene.
The tunnel scene, and then I feel like if they somehow fused Don Juan and Gustafson together, because having. I mean, we could have a puppet be Don Juan, but it won't be the same as in this movie.
Totally. That's what I was kind of thinking as I was rewatching it this time. I'm like, this needs to be on stage. I would 100% see it on stage. I think they would add more music because it's actually like a small score. There's maybe like 10 songs in it.
But I
would totally see it on stage. And I wrote down at the end of it, just like I would if I was going to the theater and seeing a musical that had this big finish. I wrote, this is the type of movie that at the end finishes that big song and you just applaud, even though you're at home. At least that's what I did.
I'm not going to lie, though. I think I liked more the separate elements of this movie rather than the whole package. Because there's some story things where I'm like, okay, do we need this? Or, oh, we could cut
this. The bank's going to foreclose on
Like I almost wish we need Gustafson to be the apprentice, so this way there is some sort of rivalry between the two of them, even though it's all in Gustafson's head and not in Jeronicus. But like, I don't know, I there's just some things writing wise that I was like not really paying attention to.
It's very like, and not necessarily in a bad way, because I think it fits the style, but there is kind of like a script formula, especially for like musicals or stage shows like that, where, you know, it's, you learn this like in improv too, narrative improv. Every day it's like this is the status quo until one day something changes and then this happens and then this. And there's stakes that you have to happen. So we got that with Gustafson. We got that with the banker. Like, that's what sets the urgency and tone for it. Like, there's plot devices and things used for stories that make it kind of work in this potentially formulaic way, but it is useful. There's a reason it's a formula. So I think you can kind of see the inner workings sometimes in this particular story a little bit, but
see the man behind the curtain.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's, again, not necessarily a bad thing, because it is a little cheesy at times, and if you're kind of just going for the ride, you kind of just accept the cheesiness, even though I know we're here to like dissect it,
right? But I mean, it's not bad cheese. I will say it's entertaining cheese, right? How's that?
It's not gorgonzola.
No.
It's nice feta.
Feta. Yes.
Why did I do an Italian accent for cheese?
I don't know. How did
mozzarella.
One last question before we get into Sharp and Flat. How did you feel, though, about the transitions that happened when they were toys but a pop-up book in a way?
Oh, so like the sort of the mechanical like marionette animation?
Yes.
That was in it. Yeah, I did want to bring that up. I really liked it.
I mean, I liked it when it was
storybook style.
Yeah. I liked it when it was the montage of like Geronicus's downfall, because it's something, there's something about like animation in that, and it's a little more
pulling at your heartstrings.
Yes, pulling at your heartstrings when it's an inanimate CGI object rather than a person crying.
Right.
Because, you know, Forrest Whitaker, and let me get this guy's name too. The one who played young Geronicus, Justin Cornwell, who's also fantastic.
He's so good. If that's his singing voice, I wanted more of him in the movies, to be honest.
Yeah, it is his singing voice. I'm looking. This looks like this is his only musical so far. He was in season 3 of the Umbrella Academy as Sparrow number 1, and he was also in Training Day on TV as one of the leads.
Well, he's amazing, and he should do more stuff, more singing stuff.
Of course. Yeah. But I
know what you're saying with that montage in particular, because that's the one where they also had the rain that was just like wire that was coming down when they were at the gravesite. And that was really beautiful. There's a lot that puppetry and like animation and marionettes can do sort of in this film world that I think I've seen elements of it in some like kind of niche stuff that I've seen, but I thought it added a nice texture to it, and really it almost puts us more as the audience into this idea that it is this story that she's telling, and takes us further away from the fact that this could be a reality for her. And so then it's a further like reach back when she's like, I'm Journey, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I kind of,
that's like so far from my mind.
I don't know, I kind of wish they used it more or something.
I could see that, yeah,
because it felt disjointed.
Like the tunnel scene could be that on stage they'll use shadow puppetry and that to for the tunnel scene, because that shot where they're flying out slow motion, the fire behind
where they
them
definitely should have died. Yes.
Oh, what a good shot. But I could see like a stage version utilizing the puppetry more for some of that fantastical stuff and sequences.
Anything else before we get to Strap and Flat that you want to mention?
Just that we talked about the banker, but we didn't mention it's played by the dad from Downton Abbey, who's great. And I love when he pops up and stuff. Hugh Bonneville,
yeah. Mr. Delacroix.
I know he's in a bunch of other stuff, but...
So, okay. Don Juan is definitely the main villain. Gustafson is, like, an antagonist, but, like, a secondary villain. Mr. Delacroix, yeah. I feel like the movie wants him to be a villain, but I don't think he really is. I think he's just...
I think he's a plot device.
He's a plot device. He's definitely an antagonist because of his job being the banker. But I don't see the character Mr. Delacroix being that villainous. You know, it's just like, this is my job. I need to pay.
But, and they make it seem like they're long friends, or people have known each other a long time. Like at the end, when he's happy for him, he's like, oh,
right,
my
like
old
he
friend.
Used to shop like, there when it was the highlight of the town, you know, when he was inventing toys and everything, which I feel like a lot of people forgot about that. Because who knows how much time actually passed in this movie?
Well, I think it's
that'd
it
be
could
like 20
be
years.
28 years, because I thought about this watch, because Gustafson says he's a 28 time toy maker of the year. And I assume that's an annual award. So he would have probably started winning it that first year. So it's probably been 28 years, which makes sense for Jessica to grow up and for Journey to be the age she is. See, I just did the math of imagination.
I saw you do your minority report finger waving for numbers and
Yeah, you
everything.
can't see it because podcasts are an audio medium,
Right,
but I
but this
was
was for
writing in the
me.
air.
Yeah, for
Yeah, yeah,
me.
yeah.
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Yes.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats. Surprise, I don't have that many, but they're kind of big. I mean, my first flat is for Geronicus. I'm sorry. It's just because that first interaction he has with Journey, I hate him. I get it. He's complicated. He's grieving. But like, my guy, somebody's trying to talk to you. Be a human. Like, whether or not you believe that this person is your granddaughter, it doesn't matter. Be a human. Be respectful, you know? I get it. You're in pain and you're sad and everything, but like, what would Joanne want you to do?
Yeah.
Just thinking, just saying. I also am flatting Mrs. Johnston. She, listen,
what?
I get it. She's comic relief, but at the same time, she's a little much at points.
Okay, I can see that.
And you know what? I want to flat that they have a singing voice for her. I don't know the actor Lisa Davina Philip at all, if she's known as a singer, or why they didn't cast Marisha Wallace as Mrs. Johnston. But come on, everyone, we're in the day and age where actors are trying to prove that they can be in musical movies. Let them be in musical movies. We are way past the studio.
Although Lauren Allred as the singing voice in Greatest Showman for that song. Do you know that?
Yeah. Sure the Jenny Lind one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, wait. No, that's well known. Everyone knows that.
That one all out. But yeah, in general, just hire the musical theater performers that can do it.
Right. You made
or
Forest
allow
Whitaker
the person
sing.
The opportunity to sing. Yeah.
You made him. You made Forest Whitaker sing. Oh, I also am flatting the fact that Felicia Rashad is not in enough of this movie for my liking. Thank you.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. How about you? What are your flats?
I basically maybe just have like one flat, which is kind of what you were saying with Geronicus's character. And I don't know if it's the character or Forrest Whitaker kind of in maybe his first musical, but there is sort of in his portrayal, like a flatter element to the character than the other people portraying their characters. Doesn't quite meet the challenge of a musical movie in the same way. So that would be my flat. Like
to give an analogy that I just thought of, he's doing Shakespeare while everyone else is doing children's theater.
Exactly. I was trying to think, I was like, yeah, he's doing like a Pinter play and they're doing
and
Oliver,
they're,
like same thing.
they're doing Wicked, and he is doing, you know,
Waiting for Godot.
Yes, like my guy, giggle, do something.
Yeah.
Any other
but
flats?
I don't know. That's kind of it. I was just gonna say I don't know who else I would see in that role. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, they should have gotten this person or this person. I still think he fit the role really well. It was just like a stylistic choice that was slightly off.
Yeah, like if Anika Noni Rose maybe matched his energy, because she did and didn't at the same time. But if she matched it a little bit more, maybe, or like, I think we also
but
needed.
But she's only in one scene with him.
I think in that one scene, we needed a cathartic conversation between the two of them. And that's probably it. That's probably what we're, you and I as viewers want with this, where it's like, you need a more tearful, like, reunion or something. Cause what we got was just like, I wrote you letters. I still love you. Hug.
Yeah.
I need.
But then they worked on Buddy together.
They worked on Buddy
and
together.
They fixed
yes.
him. And
they believed.
They believed, and it was when the family came together again and the family trauma was healed that his career flourished and his imagination and creativity flourished. And so that's a lesson for us all.
Sure, we can go with that.
Go to therapy.
That's go to therapy. Everyone, go to therapy. Sharps. So, like I said, I really liked a lot of the elements of this movie. So, like, sharp to the music, sharp to the choreography. This is going to be fun editing this later. Sharp to the costume design, sharp to the set design, sharp to the cast. Everything was at a million, but there's something when it all came together that, and I honestly think it's writing, because like the cast and their costumes with the choreography and the songs on those set pieces all work together, but then there's a book scene and I think it just fell flat in that respect. I also,
and that happens a lot with musicals, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I think that's my big sharp, is the elements of this movie, really. I could get into more details, but we'll just leave it at that. Also, I want to sharp the design of Don Juan and Buddy. I know we can pull influences or potential influences for Buddy, but he was still very an original character.
Yeah.
And Don Juan, like, I love the detail that you can see the cogs under
his hair,
his hairline, but like it looked like he had an undercut or like a fade or something. So like the cogs like kind of disappear in a way, until, you know, we see that side of him and we see like the back of his head and we're like, oh, look, cogs. But yeah, that's my
sharps. I wonder, like, the animator or the people that designed Buddy, I would love to see all the different versions they didn't go with, because I'm sure they went in a lot of different directions to try to find what Buddy should look like.
Like the preliminary sketches and all that.
Different. Yeah. So I'd be very interested to see that.
I would love a Buddy plushie. I said that earlier and I'm saying it again. Somebody make me a Buddy plushie. Like,
well, when they put it on Broadway, I'm sure they make it.
Of course. what are your sharps?
Okay, first sharp, the score, all of the music, amazing, absolutely loved it. I'm a music person, and I don't love the music for every single musical, but this one, from the very first thing I saw, that first clip of the opening number, I was hooked. It was my style. Specifically in the score, the opening number, which I don't know the names of any
this
of the
day.
Songs, but This Day. The one about It's Possible, like Journey's song, very catchy. It's been stuck in my head all day.
Miles and Miles,
maybe, or
that's her first one. The first
that's
one?
Her opening song. No, it's the other one where she's in the workroom and she's singing like little theater kid me would have loved to sing that song.
Not the only one, little. Potentially. That might be it.
Maybe. But, and then...
Oh, no, sorry. Square Root of Possible is the name of it. Square Root of Possible.
Oh, that sounds correct. Yeah, that sounds correct. And then the third song in particular...
Make It Work, right? Because you like that one with the play on words and everything?
Yeah. It's a work song. Like... You know, they have elements of that too. So whether it's something that would have like existed in life as a work song, or even like you have examples of that in Disney with like "Hi Ho," like that kind of that rhythmic something you're doing as you're working, and they have the clanging of like the blacksmithery, you know, happening. It's really, what's the word? Tangible.
It's got a cadence. And
yeah. So I
wonder.
Really,
like I wonder song. If Tim Gunn and or Project Runway tried to sue them for that one. I'm sorry, I just had to say it because it's make it work.
Make it work. Yeah. That would add a different element if they just put in his voice for each time. And Anika Noni Rose splicing Tim Gunn.
No. We are not splicing Tim Gunn into Nika Noni Rose. We're splicing him into Forrest Whitaker. When Forrest Whitaker sings.
Yeah.
Nika Noni Rose, we're not touching that.
Perfection. Song could have been 5 minutes longer and I would still listen to it.
Right.
Actually, even longer than that.
Give her a full blown aria.
My next sharp is, like you, the other elements, like design elements of it. So the costume design, the set design, like the art direction, like character design, like the puppetry animation design, just how everything was really cohesive to be that like steampunk Victorian Charles Dickens, but also like modern musical theater, colorful style really worked for me. And then my last sharp is Journey herself, the actress who played Journey, the character of Journey, to be, I think, one of the best examples. Like you said, not every kid actor can like pull these off and be really believable and genuine and just have that character exude through them. And she was exactly what this movie needed. I would watch her in so much more, but I think she was perfect as Journey.
Yeah. I'm upset that she's not ruling Broadway right now. Like I was trying to, I unfortunately her Wikipedia page is a little light and it doesn't have a lot of her theater credits. It's got her, oh no, it does. Wait. Nope, wrong person entirely. Yeah, Madeline's theater credits are not really listed on there. Like I said, she did School of Rock, but I'm not sure if she's done other things or if she's about to do other things. And so I hope more for her. You know, I want her to be in a lot more. Edison, we didn't really get a lot of him, but like, he was fine.
Yeah. No, he was good. He was cute. He's comedic kid relief. He's a sidekick for her. It's cute that he's named Edison and he wants to be an inventor and he's looking to Jeronicus for that like validation when he finally says you're an inventor. And the whole like hit my head, I'm okay. Classic.
Yes. Yeah.
Classic.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Yes. I would say the three that I mentioned. So This Day, The Square Root of Possible, and Make It Work.
I will agree with you. And I think I will add Magic Man G. Just for the... because it's Keegan-Michael Key.
Just and for the vibes. And the brass band in it.
Yeah. That one, I feel like, was when they brought in the element of, like, Black culture a little bit more.
With, like, the big band, like, that New Orleans jazz. Or I don't quite remember the tune of it specifically right now. Also,
but with the
in
brass
the snowball
section of it.
With the dance and the, like, music for the snowball fight. Like, that was a
Yeah,
nice
that
little...
one is called Grandpa Me Nay. I think it was written for the movie. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it felt like it was. And this movie, like, I know I'm like little poo pooing it at points, but I did like it. Like, I did overall.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to tell with you.
Well, you know, we're having a discussion, and the whole point of this is to pick apart things. But like, overall, you know, this is a good movie. It's a little long.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
We could trim some stuff, but like, it's fine. It's fine. It's still a good movie. I mean, I don't know if I'll watch it every year, but if I'm in the mood, I'll probably put it back on again.
Definitely. I would recommend anyone listening, if you haven't seen it, I really would watch it. It's worth seeing. Like, I I might show my niece. I don't know. She still might be a little young and her attention span sometimes is short, but
just put it
she's
on and be like dancing.
And I think she'll enjoy it and get something out of it. It really just makes you feel good.
And yeah.
It's a nice story. And again, it's not too Christmassy if you're like me and, you know, sometimes don't want to be hit over the head with Christmas.
It's a good November movie, I will say that, because it's not too Christmassy, but it's like gearing up. Like what you said, you know, it's your cheat movie in a way, but it's not really, because Christmas is kind of in the back seat of this. Yes, it kind of ends on that, and like it bookends with it, and you know, it's in the winter time and all that, and we're doing this around holiday time. But I feel like this is like, you know, if you want that Christmas spirit without being hit over the head with Christmas, this is it.
Right. Christmas is not the main character. Journey is.
Journey is. The which is funny because it's called A Christmas Journey. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey.
Okay.
Which
I always just call it Jingle Jangle.
Which I think, I don't know if that was done on purpose to play off her name.
Probably.
But I'm saying it is because it's funny. But Diana, on that note, we're done with the episode. We did it.
Okay.
We did Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey. What do you have to plug or promote?
Nothing. So... You can, you know, follow me on social media. If I am doing stuff, usually it's craft projects at this point. I just got into embroidery. You could see my progress with all this and my horseback riding adventures. But yeah, so just follow me on social media, Facebook or Instagram, no longer Twitter. As of recently. And
yeah, I'm toying with that, but I'm still going to plug it at the end. Your album, come on, your album.
Plug sure. Yeah. Plug my album. My album exists and it's out there. It's called Matters of the Heart. So you can listen to my music on Spotify, anywhere you get your music. You can buy the album through iTunes. You know, owning music is great. But give it a listen. It's some nice tunes, especially maybe you're wrapping some Christmas gifts and need something nice to listen to as you're wrapping your gifts. Give it a listen. Matters of the Heart, Diana DiCostanzo.
And if you want to talk more about Jingle Jangle and maybe point out things I forgot about why this is like an uber Christmas movie, you're more than welcome to. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Did we miss something that you really wanted us to touch upon? Or did we blatantly miss a detail that would have answered some things for us? I don't know. This movie's 2 hours long, and, you know, I only give like an hour for these episodes. And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we will be discussing Elf, Buddy's Musical Christmas. Yay, musical version of Elf.
Yay.
Well, Diana, thank you so much for being part of holiday season.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sure I'll be back for another episode.
Oh, yes, which I need to talk to you about. So, everyone, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.